Like that? We'll call the Administrative Rules Committee to order. I certainly appreciate you being here. I know there are other conflicts, but we had this statutory meeting set before anybody else scheduled, so would you take the roll call, please, Vanette?
Chairman Devlin?
Here.
Representative Banning?
Here.
O'Shea?
Here.
Snyder?
Here.
Koppelman? Lauzer? Schatz?
Here.
Tukit? Tillman?
Here.
Wise?
Here.
Senators Armstrong?
Present.
Davison?
Present.
Heckman?
Here.
And Klein?
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have quorum.
Thank you. Consideration of the minutes from the December 5th meeting. What are your wishes? Moved by Senator Armstrong and seconded by Senator Klein. It's just a voice vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carried. We'll move into the 805 agenda item, which is the State Board of Chiropractic Examiners, and essentially what they're dealing with is the rules that we held over from December 5th meeting. And if you look at your book, the very bottom line on page 4 is the rule that essentially was held over, and that is why this group is before us today. And you may start.
You may have concerning the proposed amendment to subsection 18 of the Administrative Code, item H. The primary goal of our board is to protect the public. In the past, the board has felt comfortable with the enforcement of free services and/or items, advertising, and free items for inducement being addressed in our existing rules. However, in the past 2 years, we are receiving an increased number of complaints from the public within our profession and concerns voiced by third-party payers about inducements being offered for services. In addition to the current rules and their interpretation, we are held to federal regulations. I would like you to look at the OIG Special Advisory Bulletin pertaining to Medicare beneficiaries, and as you well know, these policies are typically followed by other payers. From that report on page 1, paragraph 2, comes some interesting statements of concern that our board consistently has when we investigate a complaint of a free service or item for inducement. The offering of gifts simply raises quality and cost concerns. The providers may have economic incentive to offset additional costs attributable to the giveaway by providing unnecessary services or by substituting cheaper, lower quality services. We have some examples of this. The entire inducement section on page 4 of the report is interesting in that no proof of specific intent is required to be in violation. These are things the board needs to consider when we receive complaints. We are asking you to consider this rule to clear up any questions our providers may have about things not being clearly stated in our rules. In response to a free advertising complaint recently, the provider specifically stated in their response to the complaint that their giveaways were not a violation because they were not breaking an actual rule in their interpretation of how our current rules are written. It is not the intent of the board to limit advertising services. There are many avenues for advertising professionally and without tags for free or implied inducements for receiving services. Before I present you with some examples of what we are seeing in terms of this complaint, I must ask you these things. Have any of you received a notification from your medical provider that you'll get a free ham if you come in for your colonoscopy because of your because you haven't been in for a while, a free Thanksgiving turkey for a breast exam, a gift certificate from your optometrist for a recheck of your glaucoma, a notification of a patient appreciation day from your physician to come in to have free blood work and imaging done. These actions would be quite unprofessional and unethical as professionals, wouldn't they? We brought you several examples of some of the complaints we've had in the last couple of years. You will note that most of these examples are from social media sites or websites of the chiropractor or clinic. Recall in the last hearing I referenced ham and chicken dinner giveaways. That brings us to example number one. Turkey giveaway if you come in for treatment. This example has several violations, including some HIPAA concerns. Patients' names are mentioned. Patients' permission was not given. And specifically stated in here is that the provider intends to see, or typically sees, twice as many patients on that day as a normal day. Quality of care? I don't think so. Example number two. Free ham if you return for care. Patient hasn't been in for a while. Inducement to have the patient return. There was Medicare violations here in addition to HIPAA concerns. Examples 3, 4, and 5. Inducements to make appointments for mini iPad giveaways. Example number 6. If you come in for an appointment, you'll be eligible to win 3 $150 gift certificates. This also included some HIPAA violations. Number 7, a patient appreciation day, over $2,000 in free gifts, free examinations, free x-rays, free treatment, all against our rules currently. Example number 8, 12 days of Christmas. These giveaways included mugs, pampering products, chances to win a necklace if you make an appointment, studded earrings for an appointment and a referral, mugs containing vitamins. Specific concern here is for the public is that not all vitamins are safe for all people, and particularly the type advertised in this giveaway concerning vitamin D3. Also, the question asked on one of the Facebook postings concerning insurance coverage and their participation in insurance programs. Example number 9, we have providers wanting to have pictures of their chiropractor adjusting children uploaded onto the internet for a chance to win gift certificates. I could go on. We would hope that you would agree that with this rule, the examples given would be addressed without confusion. The board thanks you for the opportunity to again present testimony of this line item of concern that we'd like to see included in the section of unprofessional conduct in our rules. We thank you and be happy to entertain any questions. I have with me this morning Edward Erickson, Assistant Attorney General, who works with our board if there's any legal questions you'd like to have addressed.
Questions from the committee, Senator Heckerman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Given that you have that in there, if there is a violation now, what's the penalty?
The penalty is a speeding ticket initially. In other words, we'll assess a fee and give them a conditional agreement. We typically make them reattend the new doctor seminar where the jurisprudence is gone over again. So.
Questions, Representative Bainey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Remick, so what's the fee?
Our fee right now, Chairman Demlin, Representative, our fee right now is $500. And then a conditional agreement to agree to the other terms. Stop the action and attend the new doctor seminar.
Well, that's pretty high speeding fine in my opinion, but you know, I guess one of the question I would have is if you go in for a treatment, the doctor gives you a hot pack or a cold pack to help you out, now will that be banned?
No.
That's free.
It's free, but it's part of the, it's part of his outlined plan for care. If he chooses to give you that, he's not advertising that service, he's not giving it to everyone. It's probably specific to your treatment plan.
And then just one other question, Mr. Chairman. Is he going to be allowed to have coffee and cookies out in his lobby for his patients when they come in to sit down?
Chairman Devlin, Representative Benning, yes.
Further questions? And thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Was there anyone here from the regulated community on this issue? I know it was a holdover one. Seeing none, thank you. We'll move into the, are you ready, Vinette? State Electrical Board presentation, 820, item on your agenda. This is the State Electrical Board. You should have that in front of you. Oh, they were set. I thought they were set on the table. We'll grab a couple. There. You may proceed.
Good morning, Chairman Devlin and members of the Administrative Rules Committee. My name is James Schmidt. I'm representing the North Dakota State Electrical Board. The board's function is to examine applicants and issue license to those persons qualified to do electrical work, as well as to inspect electrical work, assuring it meets the minimum standards of the electrical code adopted by the board. The proposed administrative rules are not a result of a statutory change by the North Dakota Legislative Assembly. The board's goal was to repeal the existing Title 24 and create a reorganized new Title 24.1 in order to segregate, renumber, and format titles and articles in order to properly categorize so that this title makes sense and easier to read and follow, as well as being consistent with the National Electrical Code. The board uses the same procedure when adopting the North Dakota or the National Electrical Code, which is consensus of all parties. We ask for proposals to the administrative rules through quarterly newsletters that go out to all licensed electricians and other interested parties, such as power companies, associations, and engineers. This information is also published on our website. This is also covered at our annual 8-hour continuing education seminars that we provide to licensees each year throughout North Dakota. In reference to page 9 and pages 11 through 66, an oral comment was received on a proposal to repeal the existing provisions of the board's entire Title 24 and create new Title 24.1. The comment entailed providing additional methods of communication to the public. The board provided notice and communication as required and accepted the proposal. In reference to pages 36 and 47, oral and written comments were received from interested parties in favor and opposition of adopting NFPA 70, 2017 edition of National Electrical Code, and NFPA 101, 2015 edition Life Safety Code. The capability of AFCIs and GFCIs in certain areas and expansions were questioned. Also, a comment was made to include exceptions to the 2017 National Electrical Code pertaining to Title 24.1, 06, 02, 10, paragraph 9, Title 24.1, 06, 02, 10, paragraph 10, entitled 24.10604.22. The board accepted the proposals with the exceptions. On page 33, an oral comment was received at the public hearing in opposition of a proposal on title 24.10601.40, paragraph 1B, of adding heat alarms to an attached garage to a single-family residence. The board made a decision to accept the proposal. On page 21, an oral comment was received in opposition of proposal on 24.10401.02, paragraph 3, concerning continuing education course approval procedures. The board made the decision to accept the proposal with an amendment. On pages 21 and 22, an oral comment was received on title 24.10401.02, paragraph 6, concerning removing the date for providers to submit continuing education class rosters. The board made the decision to accept the proposal. On pages 35 and 36, a written comment was received but withdrawn, as this is covered under National Electrical Code Article 210.12, paragraph A. The board made a decision to accept the proposal. The advertising cost for the proposed rule change was $1,679.60, which was all placed in all county newspapers. Regulatory analysis, economic impact statements, or constitutional takings assessment were not required or prepared. These rules also do not have a fiscal effect, so no fiscal notes were prepared, and the rules were not adopted as emergency rules. At this time, I'd like to thank you, and if there's any questions, I'll give you my best answers.
Questions for Mr. Schmidt? Senator Heckerman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Schmidt, when I look at your comments on page 33, maybe I'm understanding that section wrong, because it says there was a comment received in opposition of that, of adding heat alarms to the garages. And then when I look on page 33, that's there. Am I understanding what the opposition was to? Because on page 33 on the top of that 1B, it's there.
Senator, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, Chairman Devlin, Representative Heckerman, on page 33, that's the new Title 24.1 that the board did accept. The comment in opposition.
If they were in opposition, Mr. Chairman, then that would be removed. But maybe I'm understanding it wrong.
I think, Senator Heckerman, in the language that they're using here, I think they mean they accepted the rule as originally proposed. They didn't accept the proposal from the person that made the comment.
Okay.
Correct. Thank you, Chairman.
Representative Boehning.
I think, Mr. Chairman, it would have been nice to see these in context. I think it would have helped a lot of us out. The heat alarm, at what temperatures does that heat alarm go off?
Chairman Devlin, Representative Boehning, I know I'll use an example of a product, a Simplex fire alarm system. They're variable. You know, like in a boiler room, you'll use probably a 195. For these residential ones, they're already UL listed and set up by that. I honestly don't know what the temperature rating is when you buy them. I guess they're considered tested and ready for that application. I know that's not a good answer, but I honestly don't know what that number is. I'd guess probably in the 130 range, 135, 140, right in there.
Mr. Chairman, can I continue? I guess, you know, heat alarms in an unfinished garage, it's, you know, we might hit that temperature and the alarm is going to go off. I mean, these garages that aren't heated, that aren't insulated or anything, do get pretty warm when you, especially when you have to put them up in a rafter. Is that going to cause any of them to go off?
Chairman Devlin, Representative Bainey. Well, I guess the intent was to, you know, right now there smoke detectors are required in a new residence, okay? I guess the thought process there was, it was actually one of our board members that proposed it, who is a journeyman electrician. And, you know, I honestly think it's a good idea. It's for attached garages to try and eliminate any fires that may happen in a garage, attached garage, and they're interconnected with the smoke detectors in the house to wake people up. So could there be a nuisance alarm? I suppose there could be. Good point.
I guess if I can continue, do we require currently now in the garage, we don't require a smoke detector in them, do we?
Chairman Devlin, Representative Bainey, no, at this point there isn't. So I guess this was just a thought to try and, you know, I guess, you know, the garages, you know, whatever people store in them, gas and all kinds of things for lawnmowers and vehicles, gas operated, it was just meant to be another public safety thing, so.
Or, you know, or maybe if
that was the intent of it.
Or if maybe somebody starts up a gas heater in the garage that you're trying to warm it up and then sets off your alarm.
Chairman Devlin, Representative Bainey, I guess we're about safety, and we're just trying to provide a safe environment for homeowners. So,
if I can I continue, Mr. Chairman?
Fees.
I guess I was looking. I can't find where the fees are at here now. How much have the fees gone up on these projects? And is this the same fee that a city would charge, or is it just the fee that the state charges, or on page 24 and 25.
Chairman Devlin, Representative Bainey, the fees haven't changed. What we did was we restructured our book and organized our existing North Dakota wiring standards to have it make sense. Before, I believe it was just two chapters, and as the book was, you know, you needed more administrative rules, things were just kind of added on the end. Well, we took it and we tried to reorganize it to make sense. The only things I spoke about today are just proposals to that. Otherwise, everything else is the same. If I didn't talk about fees, then fees haven't changed. And as far as I recall, I was thinking the last time the fees changed was probably 2005. Yeah, so it's, yeah, nothing. Nothing of substance was changed. We were trying to be transparent in doing this. We met with Ms. Richter there a couple times, actually, and one of our staff persons was in communication with her quite a bit to try get this all right. We understand it was a big undertaking to reorganize that book. And I do have copies of our old book here if anyone would like to see them, but we brought them with.
Further questions from the committee? Representative Koppelman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm sorry, as you know, I was late this morning because of a prior commitment, but, and I don't know if anyone has asked about this or if this was in your earlier rules, but I'm just looking at the early part of your set of rules here, and it talks about the board membership, and then it talks about the authority of the board and so on, and those are things that are normally outlined in statute, and there is a statute dealing with the electrical board. Is that, why are you putting that in the rules? Because you can't convey authority on yourself. Only the legislature can do that.
Chairman Devlin, Representative Koppelman, I believe that's just quoting the state statutes, I believe. Isn't that in the 43 section?
We're just
reprinting those. I guess they've always been in our laws and rules.
Have they? Okay.
So we just included them again.
Okay.
So,
yeah. All right. Thank you.
Further questions from the committee?
Chairman?
Representative Bainey?
Just in testimony, was there a fiscal impact on housing with the new regulations that are in this besides the, I don't know what else is in here. It's hard to tell what's new. All this language is new in here when you look at it in the book. So we don't know what's new in the book, what's been added, without taking your book and comparing it apples to apples. Alma Vonette, is there a way that we can get a marked up copy like we do with our bills with this or not?
Chairman Devlin, Representative Boehning, and like I said before, all we did is reorganize what was already there and put it in. It was in two chapters. Now I believe it's in six different chapters. The chapter six, we visited with Ms. Richter about that to try and get it to correlate to the NEC, which is the main code that, you know, our board adopts. The rest of it, you know, the other chapters are administrative, and we're just trying to section it. There was another board that had reorganized their administrative rules, and Ashley, and with Vonette's help, had tried to follow that structure to make it easier down the road, too. Plus, that Chapter 6, now, every 3 years, the National Electrical Code comes out, and there's changes to it. So it'll be easy for us to go in there by administrative rule and adjust those. Those are codes that our board has adopted over and above the NEC rules, so to make it more stringent. And the rest of it's administrative, which we didn't change. It's just reorganized.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess when I'm looking at this here, there's nothing new in here, but we added heat alarms. How much other stuff has been added?
Chairman Devlin and Representative Boehning, yeah, that's what I talked about. Was the things. There was actually 22 proposals, and I think according to what we were supposed to testify to was the ones that received oral and written comments. So that's what I commented on.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if there was, what'd you say, 22 proposals?
Yes, 22.
How many of the 22 proposals are in the new language?
Pardon me?
How many of the 22 proposals are in here that you added?
21.
21. How many are in here? I mean, what are they? Where are they?
Well,
maybe it would be easier to hold them over and have them bring them back. And because I'm looking at these, everything is new in here. We didn't add nothing, but yet we see heat alarms as something new. What's the impact on a new house? I mean, there's some things in here. I mean, I guess I kind of like to have some more information.
Chairman Devlin, Representative Boehning, impact on a new house would be the adding of a smoke or heat detector in a garage. That's going to be the detector. They're about $15. Wire to get out there. I don't know how big's a garage. You know, you're going to have a 14-3 running out there, probably, I don't know, 35 feet at the most. You know, labor, hour and a half at $70 an hour. The impact, $250, I suppose. I don't know. I guess, you know, like I said before, this is meant to be about life safety. Paula just brought me here the, we did do a breakdown on each of the proposed changes here. Our changes have already went through the Attorney General's office, and we've given them to Legislative Council. The Attorney General had, and I believe the gentleman was here. I know our attorney, Scott Forsberg, is here too. Maybe he can answer to some of those if there's any legal questions. But I don't know. What would the committee like me to do? Would you like me to go through all 22 proposals, and you're trying to be transparent here.
It was why our understanding, or my understanding, that the things you discussed were the actual changes. The rest of the rules were moved from one section of the law to another.
That's okay. In the instructions I got, Chairman Devlin, the instructions I got, we were supposed to comment on the proposals that had comment. Okay. And we have that all in our written consideration that we've submitted. I'll just read this here. No comments were received on proposals 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 13, 14, 16, 17, 19, 20, and 21. The board voted to accept these proposals. The ones I commented on were the ones that received comments. I guess I'd just like to ask the committee what I'm supposed to do. I thought I did everything we needed to.
I think you probably did. I think it's just some confusion in the way it might have been presented. But let me have Vanette explain to the committee a little better exactly what went on here.
Okay, thank you.
Chairman, members of the committee, if you notice on page 9, there was a Title 24, which is the current electrical board's code, the administrative rules. As he mentioned, there were two articles, just 2401 and 2402, and that is being repealed. And then if you turn the page, you should have a new goldenrod colored sheet on page 11. That's the start of creating the new title, which, as you can see, goes to page 66. It's reorganized, and some of the sections were made to correspond with their NEC, which you can see in the last, that last section. They also reserved a number of sections just so that we could keep the numbering consistent with the NEC provision that they are having additional requirements. Beginning on page 54 through the end of this board's section is appendices. That's not new rules. Those are some of their forms and diagrams that they wanted included as appendices. So the actual rules themselves are pages 13 to 53 with a number of these pages of reserved sections. So much of what, like he said, that was in the original code was just renumbered and put in a more logical order in these new rules.
Representative Koppelman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I think one of the points of confusion probably is because everything is underscored, when legislators look at that, we know it's new language, and some of this is not, as you said, some of it is, or essentially a rewrite of things you've had before. I guess my thought is, my recommendation is that when you come to the committee, recognize a couple things. Obviously, you do deal with Ms. Richter, and the purpose of that is to make sure that the style and form of what you're doing is correct for the administrative code. That's important. The Attorney General's Office's review is to ensure that you're not doing anything blatantly illegal, that you're operating within your sphere of authority. But really, the charge of this committee is to ensure that you're not doing anything that violates legislative intent and not doing anything that, you know, gets outside the white line, so to speak, of what the legislature has authorized the board to do. And so my recommendation is when you come to the committee, let us know what changes you've made, and then let us know which ones have been commented on. I mean, you're right, that is important. We want to know if there's been comment or concern, but we also want to know what's being changed, what's new. So I would recommend that you go through those if they're 21 or whatever, or if we want to hold them over, Mr. Chairman, and come back with that, that's an option as well, but that would be my thought.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Koppelman, we do have exactly what you talked about, the red line copy, and so it's all struck out and then it's all put back in underscored because it all got reorganized. So
Well, Mr. Chairman, and I guess I'm not so concerned with reading every single word, but if you can, you know, you said there were 20, if I heard you correctly, that there were 22 proposals and you adopted 21 of them, and proposals meaning new types of rules, I assume. So I guess I think the members of this committee would like to know, what are those new rules? What are the new regulations that you're imposing upon electricians in our state?
Okay, well, I apologize, and Representative Chairman Devlin, Representative Koppelman, I guess I thought I was following the instructions that were required of us to present to this committee.
I'm not trying to scold you. I'm just trying to help to say that's probably what, so you don't get questions that you're not expecting. That's probably what I would recommend.
You know, I know you went through what you felt were the changes, the ones that were might be controversial or whatever. Do you have a list of what other rule changes you made?
Yeah, we do. We only have one copy though. Well, in order for me to have this make sense to you, then you're going to have a copy of our old book, plus probably the NEC code book. Help. Would you like to see our old administrative rules book?
Senator Klein.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I did run this by the electrician that serves in the Senate, because I do respect his abilities and his knowledge, and just making sure he was aware of what was going on, because that's what we're doing here. We're making sure that so the folks out in the field understand, and he was. They reviewed what they have. He was very comfortable with where we're going, and said it was just a matter of cleaning up the code because it was confusing to the folks out in the field, and this brings it kind of together. So I'm just suggesting that the electrician that I hold to a high degree suggests that we're on the right track here, and that everything in here is what he feels is good language for North Dakota.
Senator, that's exactly what I got from the electrician I visited with on this, and his only thing that he could see that was new of substance was what was discussed with the garage alarm. But if the committee wants to do something else with it, I mean, Representative Koppelman.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and you know, you're probably right. There probably is nothing that stands up, but I guess I feel like, you know, it's our responsibility as a committee to see those things, and so. And we have two responsibilities, I think. One is to not only represent the any concerns the regulated community might have or ask about those, but also the public, because that's who we represent. And so, you know, I think it was Representative Boehning that was asking about what's this going to do to the cost of a new house. Those kinds of things are important to us as well.
Chairman Devlin, Representative Koppelman, you know, we did go through an administrative rules process already on those proposals, those 22 proposals. That was last November. Obviously, that's what started the whole process of this. And, you know, so, yeah, I mean, the public has heard it. The public has had an opportunity to speak to those 22 proposals. Oh. And I commented on the ones that were spoken on.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Schmidt, you know, I respect that. On the other hand, I'm not sure how many members of the public look at the legals and say, oh, gee, the electrical board is promulgating new rules. I think I better go to that meeting and find out what it's all about, unless they're involved in your industry. I recognize it's a public meeting and that they're welcome to do that. But the whole reason, one of the reasons we do this is that, you know, what happens typically, I mean, I guess in some cases, members of the public that are really tuned in to something might come to one of those kinds of administrative rule hearings, but I think normally that's the kind of thing that that involves the industry more than anything else, and or the profession that you're regulating. And then when it gets to us, you know, as I said, we need to look at it with, you know, kind of wearing both of those hats. So I don't think this has to be complicated. I think if you can just, I mean, maybe there are points you can point us to, numbers you can point us to and say, that's a new section, here's what it does, and here's the change. I mean, that's I think, all I'm asking.
Yes, I can do that. Okay, so, obviously the first one is repeal the entire 24 title, okay? The next one was to adopt the NFPA 70, which is the National Electrical Code 2017 edition, is which, you know, like I mentioned, we do that every 3 years. We review that and adopt it. We recognize NFPA 101 edition 215, which is a life safety code, which has got to do with egress, lighting, and life safety code. It's got to do with fire detection. Okay, so under title 24.103.0106, if you can find that page. I don't have the page in my number because actually I'm going by our written consideration here right now. That was the language of old title 24.02.01.02, paragraph 2. Added language to warn individuals properly licensed or registered while performing work for an electrical contractor. It's got to do with supervision and responsibilities, so that's a new title. Is this what you wanted to hear? Okay. If you can find title 24.106.0140. That was the that would have been the old title 24.02.01.16.1. That had to do with smoke detectors, heat detectors, fire alarm, carbon monoxide for event. Excuse me, Paula, could you come up here? Need a hand with these because I do have these proposals here too. As we go through these, can you find a proposal that correlates with that? And then we can actually read the proposal, and so we're on. Okay, so, okay, already did that one. Okay, so what this proposal was about was, it's the responsibility of the master or Class B electrician to ensure all employees who are or will be performing electrical work for the electrical contractor either be licensed electricians or registered apprentices with the state electrical board. That one was accepted. Okay. Where are we at here? Okay, and then the next one is the heat alarms in the garage, which, Mark, do I need to go through that one again?
And that's the 24.106.0140, you said?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, and that was added new, okay? And then with that proposal, there was a copy of a device that was recommended to go in. Now, these are all things, too, you know, that we went through with our administrative rules, so, okay? Is this, am I good here? Okay. Where are we at here? Okay, the next one ended up under new title 24.105.0101. And that was under old title 24.02.01.19, paragraph 1. And that was revised text. Basically what it was to, we have two different kinds of wiring certificates that a contractor files, paper certs, you know, which obviously is paper, and electronic, which are, we call them e-certs, and that's what we're trying to get to, so that language dealt with that, to trying to get everybody to get on the e-cert system and go paperless. And I think in another proposal we added a timeline to that, which is the next proposal. We want to get to that by August 31 of 2020. And the thinking there was that we have another administrative rule process in between there, so that if someone doesn't like that, we can discuss it, because like Representative Koppelman mentioned, you know, administrative rules, it can be a pretty thin crowd at those. And so, you know, and I'll say it again, we're just trying to be as upfront and transparent as possible here. Okay, so let's see, what do we got after that? Okay, so new title 2405-0101. Again, we've removed text from the old title 2402-01-19, paragraph 4, which, let's see. Oh, that had to do with, what's that?
Where to send the paperwork.
Oh, just, yeah, basically where to send paperwork, which was an unnecessary thing. We just struck some language that was, inspection fees shall accompany the copies of the wiring certificates, which shall be forwarded to the State Electrical Board, box 7335, Bismarck, North Dakota, 58507735. So the board accepted that one.
Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed there's a fee increase in that section. Is that a fee that I assume the consumer pays, right? Or the, am I missing something?
Chairman Devlin, Representative Koppel. No, there's no fee increase.
Are we in 24.105-0101?
Yep.
On item number 5, I believe it is. It says the certificate may be considered, I'm sorry, it's for late fees then. And the normal inspection fee as required is increased. Okay, I'm sorry, I misread that. So that's just a penalty if they're late. Okay.
Yeah.
Never mind. I'm reading on the fly here, so.
Okay.
Thank you.
Everybody good so far? Okay. Next one is 24.104-0101. Course requirements for license renewal. And okay, I already commented on that one. Okay, but I'll say it again. That should be on page 21. An oral comment was received in opposition of this proposal concerning continuing education course approval procedures. The board made a decision to accept the proposal with an amendment. So what we did was there was a year change. Obviously, we had to go from the 2014 to the new code 2017, and then the language originally read, approval of this curriculum is set at the discretion required by or of the North Dakota State Electrical Board. Well, we struck the words at the discretion of. So it's, the staff has been doing it, and that was just a cleanup of language, and we actually have an individual that's all he does is our training and monitors the continuing education credits. And so that was, yeah. Any questions on that one? Okay. This one. Okay, new title 24.104-0102, course approvals. We struck some language, and here's what we struck. Electrical continuing education programs will be accepted from technical or trades schools or college, electrical trade associations, or individual commercial providers. It's not that we still aren't accepting those. They're open for review. They aren't just blanketly accepted. We review them now, and they have to go through a screening process and comparing to other. You know, like for instance, Turtle Mountain College is trying to get a program there now, like similar to one that they have at the College of Science. So we don't just blanketly approve them. We have to review them first. So that was why we took that language out. So they actually get reviewed now for content and all that good stuff, I guess. So, okay. 24-104, 102. That was revised text again from old title, 24-02-01-22-1B. What we did there was we struck and added some language, and that had to do with course, like again, a continuing education course, the instructor approvals, which obviously we have to approve the instructors too for those classes. And initially they had 10 days prior or for application before their class, and we increased that to 30 days prior to their class. So just honestly just gives us a little more time for a thorough review of those classes before they can hold them. So, okay. I guess we're in the same section there, 24.104 or 102. Oh, that was just a renumbering of no changes, just a renumbering of the paragraph from the old title. We're still in that same paragraph. We removed text. Here's what we removed. Continuing education programs held in other states not granted prior approval according to this section may be considered for each credit if the board is provided with evidence that the educational programs meet the requirements of the state electrical board and are approved for required education credits by the public authority or licensing electricians in that state. Well, this again sort of just blanketly approved any class from out of state, and we're holding those individuals to the same requirements that we'd have of our own providers. They have to go through our process and be reviewed, which this just kind of made sense to remove that so everybody's on the same playing field. Okay. And the next one just was a renumbering. That was in that same section. Just went from E to C. Okay. Same paragraph again, just renumbering, going from F to D, letter D paragraph. Okay, the next one we're on, it's in the same paragraph, and it was renumbered, and it had revised text. It came from an old article, 24-02-01-22-1G, and let's see what we do here. We removed a requirement of a deadline, but no later than March 31st of that year. That's got to do with the continuing education provider forwarding an attendance roster to the board. Okay. We're still in the same title here. We renumbered and added language to clarify the validity of credits, meaning continuing education credits. Here's the added language. I'll read it as revised. Continuing education credits, it said, are valid. We struck that. Can be deposited with the state electrical board for a period of up to 2 license renewals. More added language here. Continuing education credits will not be given for attending the same continuing education class more than once in a code cycle, which that's pretty obvious. We don't let the electrician take the same class and get credit for it twice. Okay. Next one has revised text to keep current on the latest version of the API manual. It's referencing 24.106.05.01, hazardous locations, and there we're basically just updating from articles in the NEC from the 14 to the 17, And then in the API manual, going from the second edition to the third edition, which is the most current, they say dated December 2012. Okay. This next one, 2401-06-02-10, which was Article NEC in 2010 regarding branch circuits.
Let me just interrupt you for a second. I think we understand where you're at and what you did. Is there any other substantive changes of any type in there other than the garage door, our garage smoke detector?
Heat detector
that you haven't covered yet. I didn't think so.
No.
I think we're good. Thank you. Any further questions from the committee? Senator Klein.
I want to belabor this, but yesterday in our committee, we heard a bill that's going to now require a carbon monoxide alarm in every apartment or rental unit. Is it current language somewhere in here that says all new units that you current construction is that? Is currently required, because we're kind of looking at language trying to figure that out, but we're retroing it back to whatever unit is out there. I'm just looking, new language must mean that, or it's in here somewhere that all new construction has this already.
Chairman Devlin, Representative Klein, or Senator Klein, yes, in new construction, smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors are required to be hardwired and interconnected per North Dakota wiring standards.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one other question along those lines. We've also had bills this session regarding radon, and I mean, obviously, smoke detectors obviously have a tie to, you know, fire protection, electrical kinds of things, and I guess carbon monoxide maybe doesn't, but it's a health issue. What about radon? Is that something that you're going to be requiring, or would that fall into your area of supervision or not?
Chairman Devlin, Representative Koppelman, good question. Our office also has a position on the State Building Code Committee panel, which we're not a voting member, but we're there to give our input. And when that bill, which I don't remember what the number was, but when that bill came up, the building committee, we're sending emails around and making phone calls and stuff, and visiting with Bruce, I can't think of his name, he's in charge of commerce, Hagen, and that board was going to deal with it, in my understanding, down the line as a building code issue and not electrical per se.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your time. We appreciate the in-depth, or some of us appreciate the in-depth explanation of your rules. Committee will move on to the Insurance Commissioner. I know that there's a lot of conflicts for people coming up very quickly, but thank you, for Mr. Schmidt, for being here.
Good morning, Chairman Devlin and members of the Administrative Rules Committee. Jeff Ubin, Deputy Commissioner and General Counsel of the North Dakota Insurance Department. I'm here today in support of amendments to the five rules the North Dakota Insurance Department is proposing to make to Title 45 of the Administrative Code, involving credit for reinsurance, annual financial reporting, multiple employer welfare arrangements, or MEWAs, boilers, and insurance fraud. The proposed amendments to these rules did not result from any statutory changes made by the Legislative Assembly, and only the MEWA rule is related to a federal statute or regulation. The other four are not. The Federal Employee Retirement Income Security Act, or the ERISA, contains an exception to preemption for MEWAs in federal law, which gives the states the authority to regulate MEWAs to some degree. So where a MEWA constitutes an employee welfare benefit plan, it must comply with Title I of the ERISA and state laws, which are not inconsistent. So essentially, there are dual regulation by the state and the federal government of these MEWAs. The states regulate the financial solvency of the MEWAs and also other state laws that apply to MIWA's activities, and the feds essentially have enforcement activity for everything that relates to the ERISA. The insurance department did comply with the rulemaking process, including holding a public hearing where we received comments, we timely published notice of the rules and the hearings in county newspapers in every county in the state, and we did receive and respond to comments that we received from stakeholders. In addition, all the relevant and required analysis statements were prepared, and you should have a copy of those in front of you today, along with a summary of the comments we received and how we addressed the comments. The Attorney General also issued an opinion on the proposed rules, which is in your packet, and that opinion found that the proposed rules are within our statutory authority. So if I could just go through briefly, give you an overview of what each of the rules does. The first I'll start with is credit for reinsurance. So this chapter is being amended to correct the amount of security required for Secure 2, to make a correction to an incorrectly listed rating, and to provide for the use of an updated version of the International Chamber of Commerce publication. So essentially the first two things we're doing there, we're correcting mistakes that were made in the original rule, and then the last change, if you have the rules in front of you, is just updating the publication that we use in evaluating credit for reinsurance to the most current version that is out here today. And so all of these changes have to do with making sure we are appropriately determining the level of credit to be issued for reinsurance. The second rule I have is annual financial reporting. This chapter is being amended to add internal audit functions requirements for large insurance companies. This was only affect, I want to say, less than 5 insurance companies here in North Dakota. But basically, these changes ensure that an internal audit committee actually exists and is able to conduct a meaningful and independent audit of an insurance company's financial activities. Multiple employer welfare arrangements, or MIWAs. This chapter is being amended to update and clarify provisions of the chapter and to specify what the commissioner's regulatory authority is over MIWAs. This is particularly important because MIWAs are acting essentially as health insurance companies here in North Dakota, and they do provide the primary source of health insurance for a good number of North Dakotans. And so we wanted to make sure that these rules had appropriate guidelines and regulations so that these MIWAs have an appropriate level of reserves so that when claims are made to the MIWA to pay on health insurance claims, there's actually money there to pay the claims and that folks aren't being left with the bill. So we want to make sure, again, that these are, they have adequate reserves, that they have adequate stop-loss insurance to pay claims in case a MIWA gets hit with, say, $1 million or $2 million claim, that there's actually going to be something there backing it up. As the rules stand now, those specifications do not exist. And again, these are becoming, this is more important now because folks are starting to turn to self-funded insurance given all the changes to healthcare on the federal level. This has become a particularly more attractive option to many employers across the state of North Dakota. All right, I'll move on then to boilers. This is a simple one. All we're doing here is changing the version of the American Society of Mechanical Engineers from the 2013 version to the 2017 version. The North Dakota Insurance Department is responsible for inspecting boilers all across the state, and this is the handbook, so to speak, that we use to make sure that the boilers are in compliance with the codes that have been established. And then our final rule deals with insurance fraud. This chapter is being amended to modify the definition of when a person has a reasonable belief as it relates to the requirements for a person engaged in the business of insurance to report knowledge of fraudulent insurance acts to the insurance commissioner. And so currently the law as written is gray. It doesn't give enough specific guidance as to when a person has a reasonable belief that an act of insurance fraud has been committed. That is and that has led to a lot of insurance fraud acts not being reported to the insurance department to investigate and prosecute. That's particularly important because insurance fraud is a rapidly growing crime. It's the second most profitable crime in America today behind only illegal drug sales. And it costs every American family $950 per year, insurance fraud does. And so we think this amendment to reasonable belief will lead to more instances of insurance fraud being reported to the insurance department, which in turn will help us more successfully combat the crime of insurance fraud. Almost all of the comments we received on the proposed rule were in regard to the MIRA rule and the insurance fraud rule. After we received these comments, we did work on issues stakeholders had and accordingly made changes to the rules, which are included in the proposed rules before you today. So the rules are the result of a substantial collaborative process by the insurance department with stakeholders. And in visiting with the stakeholders, I don't want to speak with them, but I believe they find that these rules are satisfactory. And we certainly think they are good public policy for the state of North Dakota. So with that, I would encourage this committee to approve these proposed rules, and I would be happy to take any questions you might have.
Questions from the committee? Representative Koppelman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions, if I might. Mr. Rubin, I'm looking, and I'm not familiar with MIWAs or how they work, but I was noticing in the document you handed out that apparently you had some questions with respect to the authority of the department to regulate those entities, and it talks about in your response that you relied upon a legislative history for a statute from 2005 to ascertain that or to allege that you have that authority. So apparently this is not something that's expressly granted to the department in statute, but you think you found it somewhere in legislative history, am I understanding?
So Mr. Chairman and Representative Koppelman, the way that we handled this was we looked at the rule, and we're the only entity in North Dakota that theoretically could be in charge of regulating these. And so while it doesn't explicitly say that, that we have the authority to do that in the text of the law, the underlying legislative history, in fact, does say that. So when, you know, as a lawyer I've been trained, when a law doesn't give you the answer, you look to the legislative history. The legislative history says, yes, the insurance department has the authority. And this was given to the Attorney General to look at, and they did issue an opinion, which is in your packet here, saying that, yes, the department does have the regulatory authority over the MIWAs here.
I'm just wondering if it, since we're here for a legislative session, if it might be wise to ask for that to be placed somewhere in legislation. If there's any question that you have the authority and you're out there regulating something, maybe just ask us to do that, and then we can pass judgment on that question. Would that make sense?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Koppelman, so we looked at going that route too, but we had a framework in place with the existing MIWA laws that made it easier, I guess, to not have to reinvent the wheel, so to speak. The wheel had already been invented, it just needed to be updated. And so considering that framework was in place and folks have been following those laws for decades, we thought it would just be easier to work with what we had, which was happened to be in the administrative code.
Thank you. I'll hold it. Thank you.
Representative Schneider.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ubin, can you just give us a brief synopsis of your reasoning for shortening that fraud reporting period? I'm glad to see it. You changed it back, you know, from the 60 days to the 7 days and then back to the 60 days. But what was the motivation for changing that and making the standard tougher? It didn't seem to be very consumer protective, is what I'm thinking.
Thank you, Chairman Devlin and Representative Schneider. So one of the ways we found people commit insurance fraud most frequently is through arson. And when people burn down their stuff, say it was an accident, then they file an insurance claim. And the time sensitivity of our investigators to look at these scenes and process these scenes came into play with why we had originally looked at shortening the time frame. So, you know, if they've got 60 days to report insurance fraud to us, oftentimes after 60 days had passed, that evidence or that scene had become stale or compromised to some degree. And if it was 7 days, we had a much better shot of actually obtaining meaningful evidence from a crime scene where insurance fraud took place, and our investigators aren't working with information that's starting to get stale after, you know, 60 days have passed. But in speaking with the industry, they found it to be unworkable, the 7 days, that they needed more time than 7 days to report to us, so we did move it back to the 60 days while also tweaking the reasonable belief, which we think will help start that clock ticking sooner, even though we are going back to 60 days. So we felt that was a fair compromise, and speaking with the industry, they agreed with that.
Thanks.
Further questions from the committee? Seeing none, unless somebody else calls you back up, I think we're good. Thank you.
Thank you.
This isn't like a legislative, regular legislative hearing where we take, start taking testimony, but if there is there anyone in the regulated community that has concerns about the rules that the department has presented here today? Seeing none, thank you. We'll move on to the Board of Pharmacy. You're ready, Mark. Go ahead.
All right. Chairman Devlin and members of the Legislative Management and Administrative Rules Committee, for the record, Mark Hardy, Executive Director of the Board of Pharmacy. Here and appreciate the opportunity to discuss with you the administrative rule changes made to 6102.0103, which is the pharmaceutical compounding standards. I won't get my testimony, of course, enumerates each of the items that you'd like listed, and I won't go through each one of those. I'll try to summarize it the best I can. These rules deal with pharmaceutical compounding. They're not related to any federal or state, federal statute or regulation, although they do address compliance with United States Pharmacopeia standards on sterile and non-sterile compounding. USP, United States Pharmacopeia, is a nonprofit scientific organization that sets standards for identity, strength, purity, quality of medicines, foods, and dietary supplements in the United States. Kind of the gold standard as far as pharmacies related to standards of practice and how those are set. With that, recent legislation has passed, and depending on the interpretation of the FDA, may require pharmacies to comply with 795 and 797. However, we still maintain that the state has some authority over top of that process and for them to regulate the pharmacies as far as compounding within the state of North Dakota. Currently, accreditation standards for many of our hospitals, if you're critical access, it may be Medicare, CMS, or for the non-critical access, joint commissions do require compliance with USP standards. So the implications of the rule really aren't too major. You'll see in the context of the rule, there's much language that's stricken, from a very extensive last revision that the Board of Pharmacy did, and really referencing back to the standards of 795 and 797. So 795 is non-sterile compound. This kind of compounding is the very simplistic, everyday retail pharmacy may do, mixing two creams together, mixing together an ointment, whatever that would be, very simplistic stuff. The changes set forward and referencing back to 795 really doesn't change that, and that was reflected in the comments that we didn't receive any from the non-sterile compounding community. 797 is a little bit more complex, and that is sterile compounding. And of course, sterile compounding ranges from simplistic to very, very complex compounding. Simplistic in just mixing an antibiotic with a bag of saline to very complex intrathecal administration pain pumps and those kind of things. So, facilities for the most part, your small town facilities do very simplistic sterile compounding and are able to comply with the 797 standards currently pretty easily. Some of your larger facilities have much more complex sterile compounding rooms where their pressure is monitored, there's tests that goes on as far as sterility of those areas, and that is what that 797 standard refers to. The board had a very extensive adopter process. It seems to be our standard in the last few rules that we always like to have a rules hearing at the Pharmacists Association convention. And then we also met with the pharmacy technician members at their convention and discussed the rules. And we also went to the Veterinary Association convention as well to discuss the changes, as there are some implications, and there were some comments received from the veterinary communities. So included in your packet is a consideration comments with those There's really two main comments that were received. One was from practitioners about the inclusion of dilution or reconstitution of products, which there's some reference in the next revision of USP 797. But as you all may fully be aware of, but when we adopt a rule, we're adopting and reference a standard. It's what standard is in place right now. So that 2008 revision, the current revision, which is going through the process as far as becoming a finalized chapter from USP, is still in that process. And I would agree with the individuals that made comments that there's some concerns there. But we'd have to go through a rulemaking process again to adopt that next revision of that. So the second one was veterinary concerns about the ability for them to get compounded products that they could use within their office setting and then could give those out to clients, and that we addressed that concern and they were happy with those changes. With that, I don't think I have anything else that I would need to really discuss at length unless the committee has some questions, and I'd be happy to answer any of those for the committee.
Questions from the committee? Representative Koppelman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hardy, you moved past it kind of quickly, but you mentioned that there was an area, and I think it was in comment, that someone felt there needed to be something different needed to be done. You agreed, but you felt you'd have to go through a new rule process to do it. What was that again? Could you?
Yeah. Chairman Devlin and Representative Kaufman, sorry for not being clear on that.
That's fine.
And so, you know, there were some concerns from some of the practitioners, specifically dermatologists and allergists, and then, of course, the Medical Association kind of spoke for those groups overall about the inclusion of potential dilutions or else reconstitution of products that may be inclusive of the next chapter of 797 that is set to be released maybe in 2017, maybe 2018. And that's kind of a controversial process nationally.
I see.
But
we'd
go back to the current standards.
Thank you.
Yes.
Further questions? Being none, thank you. I know, committee, several of you have things at 9:30, but I also know that we need a quorum to vote on the Department of Human Services thing that's coming up next, so I'm going to bar the door to allow them to speak. Maggie? What? Well, the chairman regrets that you've been held a little longer than should have been, and he accepts full responsibility, as chairman should always do when things don't run as according to plan. Go ahead.
Yeah. Good morning, Chairman Devlin and members of the Administrative Rules Committee. I'm Maggie Anderson with the Department of Human Services, and I think my piece can be very short. Originally, we submitted the developmental disabilities rewrite of that section of rule last year, and originally there were going to be three pieces that were included in that rule. One was the conversion to the new rate setting methodology. The second one was to ensure that we were compliant with what's called the Home and Community-Based Services Settings Rule. That's a federal rule. And we had submitted a statewide transition plan to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And as part of that, some rules needed to be changed within the DD rules section. And then there were just general updates because that section of rule we hadn't kind of done front-to-back updates in quite a while. In September of 2016, we halted moving forward with implementing the DD rate setting change, and that was done because we had received feedback from DD providers and families that they were concerned that new rate setting system may result in individuals that are being cared for losing access to some of those services. And so we pulled back on that, so we came to you in December with modified rules, and those rules then essentially brought the home and community-based settings piece forward. The rate setting pieces had been parsed out of there. And but at that December hearing, we notified you that we had been in conversations with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and they had indicated some concern about what they call conflict-free case management. So while the case management system that we are using within the DD system is what we've been using since that system was built after the lawsuit and individuals were transitioned to the community, at that time CMS was expressing concerns about that, with, again, conflict-free case management. Last Friday, Tina Bay and I and others from her division participated on a call with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and they have indicated they will not allow us to go forward with the waiver until we fix, in their words, the conflict-free case management. That is going to be no small undertaking. We are going to have to figure out whether that is tasks that can be assumed by the Department of Human Services, DD program managers, whether we will have to do a request for proposal and find another entity to do that, of course, all within the appropriation that we will have at that time to provide services. And so we are here today to, number one, I will tell you that Senate Bill 2187, which is now in the House, is a bill that would implement the DD rate setting system. So that piece is moving forward, and you may see us back with that part of the change that we had amended out of the December rules. But today we are here to ask you to withdraw the rules that we had originally brought forward, then amended in December, and now we're asking you to withdraw them because we really can't have those rules go forward and be inconsistent with the waiver that we have with CMS. And the waiver is essentially the agreement we have with them to provide these services and is essentially the payment mechanism to receive the federal financing. With that, I would answer any questions.
Senator Armstrong.
Mr. Chair and Maggie and whoever's doing this, fine with that because I had a bunch of interesting questions, but when we go right on these criminal conviction codes, can I ask a favor when we do this moving forward? Can somebody please call me? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Armstrong,
and
I know John Alm from our legal unit would be happy to give you a call.
And the House Chairman agrees, concurs, judiciary.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Koppelman.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and Maggie, so the rules that you're talking about are the ones before us, or are they a separate set of rules?
They are the ones before you.
Great.
All right.
Yes.
And secondly, does the, with the folks you've been speaking with, is the change of administration likely to have any effect on their opinion on this?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Koppelman, we did not bring that up last Friday. This call was less than a week ago. It is certainly something that we plan to engage and pursue, because while we can always improve how we do things, this, for the most part, we haven't had concerns expressed about this. We will work through what alternatives would look like, but we want to have that information before we go to the federal government, and we want to work with our DD providers and through the advocacy organizations to make sure we're not missing some obvious piece that truly could be a conflict today.
So, Mr. Chairman, I guess just a procedural question then. If, are you asking us to void these rules at this point, or they are not, I guess that would be the procedure since you've gone through the process. And if we do that, suppose the administration does come back in 2 weeks and say, yeah, what you did is pretty good. I mean, does that put you back to having to start all over again?
Yes.
Is there any alternative? Can we hold them over?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jonathan Alm, legal counsel for the department. It's my understanding that the Administrative Practice Act only allows holdover
for one.
We've held
them over once already.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Armstrong.
I'd move to withdraw the rules.
Second.
Void.
Second. We will make sure that the proper motion is recorded. So, any discussion? Representative Snyder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have one question for Maggie. Is there any spillover impact on the rate setting piece of this, the Senate Bill 2187?
Mr. Chairman, and let's see, I got to think about this. We had an emergency clause. Mr. Chairman and Representative Schneider, there's an emergency clause, the emergency rulemaking. It gives the department authority to do emergency rulemaking. Oh, that's right. It has a delayed effective date, and then we would have the 9 months from that effective date to adopt the rules. And since we already, for the most part, have them written, unless there's any changes with the legislation. So the way that the effective date says is becomes effective the later of August 1st or the date we receive approval from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services of that rate setting. So whatever that date would be, then we'd have 9 months from them. So we weren't concerned about the timeline to bring the rules back because we'd have that time period.
Any further discussion? We have a motion before us. We poll the committee.
Chairman Devlin?
Yes.
Representatives Beening? Boucher?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Koppelman?
Yes.
Lauser? Schatz? Stukert? Thoman?
Yes.
Weiss?
Yes.
Senators Armstrong?
Yes.
Davison?
Yes.
Heckelman?
Yes.
And Klein?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, motion carries.
Thank you. Is there any other committee discussion and directives? Seeing none, thank you for being here. Representative Chairman Kameen, thank you for allowing us to have the room. Thank you. Adjourned. Yes.